Hey friends, my name is Scott, and I am part of the CA Jail Outreach Team. I just wanted to say, welcome. I am genuinely excited that you chose to spend this time with us today, because we're discussing something that has absolutely transformed the energy here in our office, and honestly, our own lives too. You might have heard the business concept, Eat the Frog. Before we jump into what that means, let me start with the most essential question of the morning. A quick reminder, don't let your tadpole mature into a frog. The key is to tackle that frog, your most significant, most intimidating task, first thing, so it doesn't grow into a monster that ruins your day. If that sentence makes you cringe, smile, or immediately check your to-do list for something slimy, then this episode is for you. Now, I know the phrase sounds wild, but at its core, it's simply about facing your biggest challenge, that one thing you're dreading first thing in the morning. And that's precisely what we're going to unpack. Today isn't just about clever little tricks or good habits. No, we're getting right to the heart of it, sharing the spiritual insights you need to make this strategy stick for the long haul. We hope that you walk away with a real, usable blueprint for pushing forward, tackling those challenges one difficult task at a time. All right, in just a minute, Trinity and Steve are ready to take over. But before I turn the mic, just a quick reminder of how we sign off. We never say goodbye here, friends. We always say, until the trumpet blows. Let's keep pushing forward together until he comes. God bless you, and here they are, Trinity and Steve.
Welcome, everyone, to The Growth Journey, a deep dive podcast. I'm really excited to be here with you today. We're going to immerse ourselves in a really interesting approach to productivity, one that promises, well, not just efficiency, but maybe even transformation.
Yeah, thrilled to be here, too. And we're looking forward to guiding you through this. We're part of the CA Jail Outreach Digital Community Team. And this deep dive, it's a bit unique, isn't it?
It is.
The wisdom we're exploring today, it comes straight from the memoir written by our own CEO and founder, David Everett.
That's right. And the memoir, it has this unforgettable title, Stop Kissing Your Frogs. Tackle That Ugly Task Before Coffee. It really distills decades of, well, hard-won wisdom.
Absolutely.
And for you listening, we want to be clear about our focus here. By producing this content as a deep dive, it actually allows the boss, David Everett, more time, more mental space for other really critical initiatives, things central to CA Jail Outreach's powerful mission.
And that mission, it really is the anchor for everything we do here. It all stems from the CEO's really profound heart for people, especially, you know, those navigating the tough complexities of the justice system. Mm. We're talking about folks with loved ones currently in the jail system.
Yeah.
CA Jail Outreach is just completely dedicated to providing hope and laying the groundwork for second chances during what are, let's face it, profoundly challenging times for families.
So true. So who is this author? Mm-hmm. Who is David Everett? His solid wisdom approach, it's grounded in some serious experience and expertise forged from, what, 22 years of military service?
That's right, 22 years. He rose as a combat veteran, went through rigorous military leadership training. That includes the Highly Strategic Advanced Strategist Program.
That's a really key point for context, isn't it?
It really is, because David was a military leader and strategist during those service years, focused on command, execution. He was not a military chaplain back then.
Right.
Now, however, he serves as a dedicated chaplain within the jail system. So he's integrating that deep leadership, that strategic thinking, with his faith foundation, which, you know, also includes a Bible college education.
Okay, so it's that combination. Strategy,
yeah.
Faith, and just, well, life experience. Mm-hmm. Over 30 years of marriage, facing triumphs, but also profound personal loss. That's what makes the advice in this memoir feel so incredibly practical, so actionable for you, the listener.
Yeah, it's wisdom that's built to last. You feel that when you read it.
Okay, let's do it. Let's unpack the core idea, the one that gives the memoir. It's a very catchy title, Eat the Frog.
Right. And what's fascinating, I think, is how simple the concept sounds. But that simplicity, it kind of hides its powerful potential, doesn't it?
It does.
David frames this as a really fundamental, powerful time management strategy, something that can genuinely transform your productivity and this is crucial, your spiritual discipline too, it's pitched as the antidote really for feeling overwhelmed or, you know, being stuck in procrastination.
And the idea itself, as Chaplain David points out, it springs from that classic kind of humorous quote, usually attributed to Mark Twain. Right?
That's the one. Eat a live frog first thing in the morning and nothing worse will happen to you the rest of the day.
So the frog then.
Yeah.
It's not just any old task.
No, definitely not. It's the hardest one, the most dreaded, the highest impact piece of work on your plate, the one you are absolutely most likely to put off.
Okay.
So if you tackle or, you know, consume that one difficult thing first, you've essentially neutralized the biggest threat to your morale, your productivity, for the entire day, right off the bat.
Wow. And the philosophy behind it, Mr. Everett captures it in this really concise, powerful quote. It kind of sets the stage for our whole discussion today, I think.
And which one is that?
He says, "The smallest tasks, diligently completed, build the character for the greatest achievements."
Hmm, that's good.
Yeah, the focus is clearly on that daily disciplined action, not waiting around for some, you know, grand opportunity to strike. It's about the now.
Exactly. It's about building momentum through diligence. So let's start with the cognitive burden of work. You know, when you look at your to-do list, what feeling does that word task actually bring up? The memoir suggests, and I think this resonates, that for most of us, it immediately carries this this weight, because the root of the word itself, it's deeply connected to obligation, to demand. Burden.
Right. And the memoir really dives into this feeling. There's a section titled Escaping Pharaoh, Why Your To-Do List Doesn't Need a Taskmaster. That's pretty evocative.
It is. It connects that modern feeling of being buried under work directly to that, well, ancient, really powerful imagery from the book of Exodus.
Talk about that connection a bit more.
Well, think about the Israelites under Pharaoh, right? They were scattered, overwhelmed, punished by these cruel taskmasters, forced to meet impossible demands, often without the resources they needed, like straw for bricks. That feeling of being a victim of your workload, feeling scattered and just ineffective because the demands seem endless and you honestly don't know where to start. That is the modern taskmaster David's talking about.
And our modern taskmasters, they're maybe less dramatic than an actual pharaoh, but maybe just as ruthless in their own way?
I think so. There are the constant tings from email notifications, right? The relentless, sometimes artificial urgency of deadlines, that crushing pressure that comes from constantly reacting to things, to external demands, instead of, you know, intentionally deciding what truly matters most.
We end up living in this state of just cognitive reaction, not proactive choice.
Exactly. And the eat the frog method, as David teaches it, is presented as the strategic path to freedom from that victim mentality. It's about reclaiming your agency over your day.
How so?
By choosing, actively choosing, to tackle the hardest thing first. You shift. Mm-hmm. You move from being controlled by your workload to becoming a master of your time. You inject purpose and intention right back into the start of your day.
That shift, moving from being a passive victim to a proactive master, it lines up really well with the spiritual foundation that David layers into the memoir, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. He brings in supporting scriptural context right here from Zechariah 4, verse 10, KJV.
Okay, Zechariah 4, 10. What does that say?
Well, the key part of the passage asks this question. Who hath despised the day of small things?
The day of small things.
Right. And the memoir synthesizes this beautifully. It reminds us that God actually honors the diligence, the sustained effort we put into those seemingly small daily challenges, our small things.
So eating the frog isn't just about productivity.
Not just. If your day starts with dedicating yourself to tackling that dreaded frog, that effort itself has intrinsic value. It builds character in a way that goes far beyond just, you know, checking a box on a list.
It validates the daily grind in a way.
Yeah.
It tells us that those small, maybe difficult wins, they're spiritually significant, strategically important too. They contribute to something much bigger than just like a clean inbox by 5 p.m.
Precisely. Now let's talk about the flip side, the cost of not doing it, the cost of delay. David titles this crucial analysis, The Dreaded Slimy Growth. Why delay makes your frog a monster.
Ugh, slimy growth. We've all felt that, haven't we? That psychological energy you spend just worrying about the difficult task, dreading the moment you have to start. It almost always outweighs the energy it takes to actually do the thing.
It really does. That internal negotiation, the bargaining with yourself, it's exhausting.
And that burden, it's not just sitting there quietly, is it?
Not at all. Mr. Everett points out that the task you avoid doesn't just wait patiently. It actively consumes your internal resources, your mental energy. It grows slimy, as he puts it. It casts this shadow of anxiety over your whole day.
So if you let that frog wait until, say, 3 p.m.
By then, that frog has mentally morphed into, like, Godzilla in your head. It's been draining your cognitive bandwidth, your willpower, all day long. That's basically the definition of decision fatigue caused by, well, self-sabotage.
Okay, so here's the payoff. The immediate, tangible benefit of committing to eat the frog before coffee, as the title says.
Right. You instantaneously remove that mental anchor, that weight. You neutralize Godzilla before the day even really gets going.
It's huge.
It is. The memoir really emphasizes this. You've won the most brutal battle of the day early. Everything else that follows, the emails, the routine calls, the standard stuff, it just feels dramatically easier, lighter somehow.
So you start the day not with dread, but with a clear win. A sense of accomplishment.
Exactly. It sets this proactive, kind of victorious tone for the next 8 hours or so. The psychological payoff isn't delayed. It's immediate and really powerful.
Okay, that psychological relief, you can almost feel it just talking about it. But let's go a bit deeper than just the feeling. Let's get into the mechanism. Why does Mr. Averitt suggest this technique is, like, positively addictive?
Well, the boss titles this tactical explanation, the endorphin kick. Why swallowing that frog gives you a high. So this isn't just philosophy. It's about harnessing a bit of neuroscience, actually.
An endorphin kick. Okay, let's analyze that a bit more. What's the precise mechanism happening in our brains when we successfully eat the frog?
It's basically a neurological reward loop. When you complete a significant task, especially a challenging, high-impact one, your frog, your brain releases chemicals, specifically endorphins and dopamine.
Okay, endorphins and dopamine, what do they do?
Endorphins act a bit like natural painkillers. They reduce discomfort and can create a sense of euphoria, that runner's high feeling. Dopamine is crucial for the brain's reward system. It creates a feeling of intense satisfaction, pleasure, and motivation. It tells your brain, hey, that was good. Do it again.
Ah, so it's a natural, healthy kind of high.
Mm.
And that reward system then trains your brain, right?
Yeah.
It learns to associate completing that hard task with pleasure.
Exactly. You're building a habit loop.
Mm-hmm.
The action tackling the frog leads to the reward, that endorphin and dopamine kick, which then reinforces your desire to repeat the action tomorrow. That's the positive addiction to productivity David's referring to.
Okay, compare that to procrastination. What happens right then?
Well, procrastination often gives you a temporary relief because you're avoiding discomfort. That's driven by the limbic system, the emotional part of the brain. But that relief is super fleeting, isn't it?
Yeah, it usually gets replaced pretty quickly by guilt.
Right. Guilt, anxiety, and the awareness of that frog just getting slimier. The eat the frog technique, on the other hand, provides a sustained reward, a feeling of genuine accomplishment.
And this builds character.
The memoir argues it builds what it calls an action-oriented character, that fundamental quality of getting important things done. And let's be practical, that's often directly observed, measured, and frankly, rewarded in careers with advancement and, yes, greater compensation. People notice, doers.
That inherent reward for diligence, for focused action, it connects perfectly to the spiritual context David brings in next. He uses Proverbs 10, verse 4, KJV.
Yeah, and the text there is, well, pretty stark, a very clear contrast. It basically says that the consequences of slack hands, which you can read as the mindset of avoidance, procrastination, lead towards poverty, whether material or spiritual. But conversely, the reward earned by the hand of the diligent brings wealth or abundance. So it aligns the spiritual value of focused hard work directly with the psychological and even material rewards that can come from the eat the frog strategy. You're choosing diligence over delay, and that's framed as an act of wisdom.
Got it. Okay, let's get really practical now. For the listener who's thinking, okay, I get the why, now give me the how. Let's break down the strategy. This section is titled Frog, Tadpole, Delegate, Eliminate, the Modern Productivity Menu.
Yes, this clarity is absolutely essential for actually doing it. So first, the frog. As we've said, this is the single most important, highest impact, most critical item you must complete today. It's the one thing that, if you do it, moves the needle significantly toward your most important goal. Just one main frog, usually.
Okay, the frog is the main course. What about the tadpoles?
The tadpole is something that, yeah, probably should be done, but the consequences of delaying it are relatively minor. These are secondary tasks. They only really gain importance after the frog has been eaten, never before.
Makes sense. Keep the main thing the main thing. What's the third category? Delegate.
Delegate. And this is strategic. If a task isn't uniquely dependent on your specific skill set or maybe your positional authority, the memoir argues it must be delegated.
Why must?
Because delegation frees up your finite time, your energy, your focus, exclusively for eating your frog and doing other high-value strategic work that only you can do. Protect your energy.
Okay. And the last one, the one that sounds kind of satisfying, eliminate.
Huh, yeah, it can be very satisfying. These are the time wasters, the things that often masquerade as obligations but offer zero real impact on your long-term goals or your mission.
So we need to be ruthless here.
As David suggests, yes. Ruthlessly identify them and just drop them entirely. If it doesn't feed the frog or a tadpole that truly matters or a mission-critical objective, eliminate it. Save that precious mental bandwidth.
Okay, that's the menu. Now, to make this even more effective, David Averitt includes some advanced rules, turning this into what he calls a power list. Rule one, limit the frogs. Don't try to eat 10 at once.
Right. This hits on the paradox of choice. If you label 10 things as frogs, you haven't prioritized. You've just created overwhelm. You've defeated the purpose.
So how many?
The rule of thumb is stick to one clear frog for the morning focus. And maybe 3 to 5 critical items total for the entire day. That includes the frog and maybe some key tadpoles.
Mm-hmm.
Focus is force multiplication, remember. Less is often more here.
Okay. Rule two sounds strategic. Schedule your frog for your inner superhero time.
Yeah, I like that phrase. This is simply acknowledging our natural human energy cycles. For most people, that 3 to 5 hour window right after waking up is when cognitive energy, focus, willpower, it's all at its peak.
So don't waste it on email.
Exactly. The memoir is pretty fun here. Don't try to force your main frog into your energy slump at 2 p.m. You have to identify that peak performance window for yourself and then aggressively protect it. Treat it as sacred time for your hardest, most important work.
Rule three sounds like something a military strategist would love. Forced efficiency using Parkinson's law. The idea that work expands to fill the time you give it.
Oh, absolutely. This is a powerful use of constraints. We've all done this, right? If you allocate 4 hours to write a difficult report, somehow it takes exactly 4 hours, often with some needless tinkering or distractions thrown in.
So the boss advises using the clock to force yourself to work faster. But doesn't that risk sacrificing quality?
That's the key clarification. It's not about rushing carelessly. It's about increasing intensity and focus within a shorter time frame. For instance, if that frog report usually takes you 4 hours, try blocking out just 2 really intense hours for it.
Okay, how do you maintain intensity and quality?
You use techniques during that block, like the Pomodoro method, say, 25 minutes of pure deep focus, then a strict 5-minute break. Rinse and repeat. You use the time constraint to drive laser focus, preventing the frog from swelling up with unnecessary fluff or procrastination disguised as thinking.
I like that using the constraint to drive focus, not just speed. Okay, and rule four tackles the mental game. Stop overestimating the slimy factor.
Yes. We constantly sabotage ourselves here. Our limbic system, the emotional brain, is wired to avoid discomfort. So it predicts that uncomfortable tasks will take way longer and be far more painful than they actually turn out to be.
We build it up in our heads.
Exactly. Mr. Average just reminds us, once you simply start, the reality rarely matches the dread you built up. So set that tight timer, acknowledge the initial discomfort, take the first small step, and just watch how quickly that perceived difficulty starts to melt away. Now, shifting gears a bit to the organizational level, Chaplain David really emphasizes that bringing the system into a team or workplace shouldn't be like drudgery. It should be embraced with culture and even humor. He calls this section, "Our office is full of happy frog eaters."
That's great. Humor definitely makes discipline less intimidating, doesn't it? And it can create this kind of positive, lighthearted accountability within a team where you can actually laugh about the frog. Maybe some of the dread goes away, replaced by a bit of camaraderie.
For sure. And the memoir shares some fun phrases they actually use within the CA jail outreach team. Like the classic check-in is just, "Did you eat your frog yet?" Simple, direct, kind of keeps it top of mind.
Yeah, I like that. And the proactive reminder one is brilliant. Don't let your tadpole mature into a frog.
Right. It's such a great visual warning. Don't let those smaller, manageable tasks pile up and compound until they become these major anxiety-inducing problems later on.
Handle the tadpoles before they grow teeth.
Exactly. And then, tying back to that spiritual core we talked about, there's this daily reflection phrase. Did you remember to pray for your strength before eating your FRG?
Ah, I like that integration.
It just seamlessly weaves faith into the act of daily discipline. It's a prompt to remember, you know, commit your works to the Lord before you even start wrestling with that frog.
Okay, so this talk about recurring tasks, it leads us to a really big insight for sustainable productivity, something beyond just daily tactics. The CEO titles this, The Recurring Frog Problem. Stop eating the same meal every day.
Yes, this is where we really see the shift from just task management to true systems thinking. And you can feel David Averitt's advanced strategist background here.
What's the core idea?
The core idea is, if the exact same unpleasant, complex task keeps showing up on your list day after day or week after week, the issue probably isn't your willpower or your discipline. You likely have a systemic process problem that needs a strategic fix.
You're treating the symptom eating the same frog, not the underlying disease, the reason the frog keeps appearing.
Precisely. And this is where that powerful quote from Chaplain David fits perfectly again. The secret of getting ahead is getting started. You have to start the critical work of analyzing the root cause. Move beyond just coping with the recurring problem every day.
A military strategist wouldn't fight the same battle the same way over and over again if they kept getting bogged down, right?
Absolutely not. If you're constantly eating the same ugly meal, you need to apply some strategic analysis. Maybe use something like the 5 Whys technique to dig down and discover why that meal exists in the first place. What's broken in the process upstream?
Okay, so how do we fix it? The memoir outlines 2 key strategies for transformation. First is the mindset flip. Reframe your frog.
Right. This requires some honest introspection. You have to ask yourself, why do I actually label this specific task a frog? Is it the content itself? Or is it maybe the pressure associated with it, the format, the perceived judgment?
Give an example.
Okay. Say you despise writing detailed weekly status reports. The memoir suggests reframing it. Maybe instead of reporting, think of it as free writing the facts needed for team optimization. Or maybe documenting progress to celebrate wins.
Just changing the label can help.
Sometimes. Or maybe it's the method. If typing it is the frog part, could you use voice transcription to just dictate the facts quickly, then have someone else format it? That small shift in semantics or skill application might eliminate the pressure and remove that dreaded frog label entirely.
Okay, that's the mindset shift. What's the second strategy? The process fix.
The process fix. Transforming the task itself using automation, templates, or maybe strategic delegation. If a task is constantly recurring as a frog, the workflow is fundamentally inefficient or ill-suited to you.
So we need to diagnose the workflow.
Exactly. The memoir gives us some essential diagnostic questions, almost like a mini systems audit. You need to ask, what tools or automation could I use to get this task or parts of it done like 80% faster? Can I delegate this entire task? Or maybe just the parts I hate the most?
And this one's key.
Crucially, what is the single least favorite part of this task for me? And how can I simplify or completely eliminate that specific step? For example, if you hate formatting the budget spreadsheet every month, could you create a locked template once and then maybe delegate the data entry part?
So the ultimate goal here, drawing from Mr. Everett's strategic approach, isn't just to tolerate the recurring frog or eat it faster.
No, the strategic goal is to systematically transform that recurring frog into just a routine tadpole. Something manageable, or ideally to redesign the system entirely so that a task gets eliminated from your personal menu altogether. Fix the root cause.
Makes sense. And there's one more practical tip for our digital age, your digital butler, how AI helps you tackle the ugly task.
Yeah, this is a simple but clever hack for dealing with modern choice paralysis. We have so many things vying for our attention.
So what's the tip?
Just by labeling the task frog, followed by the task name like frog, draft, project, proposal in your digital calendar, your to-do list app, whatever you use, Google, Todoist, Asana. You're essentially instructing the organizational AI, the algorithm, to prioritize that one item visually.
How does that help?
It leverages technology to reduce friction. When you open your app first thing, that critical high priority item is right there, maybe highlighted or at the top. It stares you down, basically. This drastically reduces the temptation to click on an easier, lower impact tadpole instead, just because it feels less daunting.
You're using the tech to force the prioritization you already decided on. A digital commitment device.
Exactly. Simple, but effective.
Okay, so we've covered the strategy, the science behind it, the systems thinking for recurring issues. Let's bring it home by revisiting that deep spiritual core that makes David Averitt's whole approach feel so, well, holistic. The section is titled, Finding the Faith to Feast, Spiritual Strength for Your Daily Frog.
Right, because for Chaplain David, this eat the frog method, it really goes beyond just secular efficiency tips. It's framed fundamentally as a way to honor God. How? by wisely stewarding our efforts and, crucially, our time. It becomes an act of diligent, focused stewardship.
And the foundational scripture he points to here is Ephesians 5, verse 15 through 16, KJV.
That's the one. And that passage instructs us, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil."
Redeeming the time. That's a powerful phrase. What does it mean in this context?
It literally means something like buying back or making the most of time that might otherwise be wasted, squandered, or just misspent on low-value activities. So by prioritizing the frog, the most valuable, highest impact action, the memoir argues we are acting wisely. We're treating time as the precious, non-renewable gift from God that it truly is.
Wow. Okay. So that reframing, it turns the discipline of prioritization itself into potentially an act of worship.
That seems to be the implication. And this connects directly to some key spiritual disciplines outlined in the memoir. The first one is, seek his will before you seek your frog.
Pray before you plan.
Essentially, yes. The memoir encourages taking a moment for prayer and seeking alignment before you even definitively label what your frog for the day is. This is supported by Proverbs 16, verse 3, KJV. Commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established.
So prayer helps clarify your thoughts.
The idea is that establishing your thoughts and priorities through faith helps ensure you're tackling the right frog, the task that truly aligns with your God-given purpose or calling, rather than just reacting to the loudest, most urgent demand that might not actually matter in the long run.
Okay. Spiritual discipline number two, don't be a time fool. Recognize time as a precious gift from God.
Yeah, this is a pretty direct reminder of our responsibility as stewards. From David's perspective, consistently wasting time isn't just inefficient. It's arguably a failure of stewardship over a divine gift. So our intentional effort to tackle the hardest, most necessary thing first becomes a powerful acknowledgement of the value of that gift. It's rejecting the folly of distraction and aimlessness.
And the third discipline ties it all together. Treat your desk job like an act of worship, doing everything with excellence.
Right. This is underpinned by Colossians 3, verse 23, KJV. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men.
Do it heartily.
Yeah, with your whole heart. So whether your frog today is some unglamorous piece of paperwork or a major strategic decision or a difficult conversation, performing it heartily with full effort, integrity, diligence elevates it. It makes it more than just mundane work. It becomes an offering done as unto the Lord.
Okay, that provides a really deep foundation. But let's inject a practical challenge here. This method, while it sounds effective, can also sound pretty rigid. What about the listener who hears eat the biggest, ugliest frog first and just feels paralyzed, demotivated even?
That's a really important point, and the boss addresses this directly in the section. Wait, is this diet right for me? Which I think shows real leadership, acknowledging that one size doesn't fit all.
So he recognizes that the sheer size of a frog can sometimes lead to shutdown, or maybe that not everyone is a morning person with peak energy first thing.
Exactly. The memoir offers some excellent validated alternative adaptations to meet different psychological needs or work styles. It's not about dogmatically sticking to one method if it genuinely doesn't work for you.
Okay, let's quickly run through these alternatives. First one, start with a win.
Right. If that main frog just feels completely insurmountable first thing, the advice is begin instead with a sizable but maybe more enjoyable task. Perhaps a challenging tadpole, you know, you can complete relatively quickly.
What does that achieve?
You get an early sense of accomplishment that releases a small initial burst of dopamine, giving you that psychological boost, that feeling of momentum you need to then turn and face the actual frog, or at least a difficult piece of it.
Okay, build momentum with an easier win first. What's the next alternative? Divide and conquer.
This is for the truly massive frogs, the ones that feel like multi-day projects. You break them down strategically. You identify the absolute hardest, most mentally draining 20% of that task that becomes the frog segment for today.
And you schedule just that piece.
You schedule only that core difficult component for your peak energy time. Then the prep work, the research, the organizational setup, the easier bits you can tackle those during lower energy blocks later in the day or week. Focus your best energy on the hardest part only.
Okay, the third one, weekly dining, scheduling the single most draining task just once a week instead of daily. My question here is, won't the anxiety about that huge task just build up all week until Tuesday morning comes around?
That's a totally valid concern, and the memoir addresses it. Weekly dining only works if you practice two things rigorously: intense mental preparation for that day and really strong boundaries the rest of the week.
How so?
You schedule that monumental frog for, let's say, Tuesday morning, and you block out significant time. The key is mentally compartmentalizing. On Monday, you commit your full focus to Monday's frog or priorities. You have to trust the process, trust that the time set aside for Tuesday's mega frog is protected and sufficient. It's designed to prevent that daily mental drain from the anticipation of the huge task, while still ensuring it gets the focused, uninterrupted attention it requires when the time comes. Requires discipline, though.
Definitely sounds like it requires discipline. Okay, and the last alternative, the momentum built.
This is a bit similar to start with a win, but maybe with even smaller tasks. If you really struggle just getting started at all, the idea is to begin with maybe 3 to 5 very minor, quick, possibly even enjoyable tadpoles.
Like clearing quick emails or making a simple phone call.
Exactly. Things you can check off fast. The sheer act of checking off those easy wins rapidly builds speed, and confidence economists might call it velocity. You gain momentum before you shift gears to confront the major challenging item. The underlying goal, again, is always to get started and achieve some immediate forward motion.
So whether you decide to become a dedicated daily frog eater, or maybe you find one of these flexible alternatives works better for your style, the ultimate outcome, as David Averitt outlines it in his memoir, it stays the same, doesn't it?
Yeah, the end goal isn't just frantic activity or looking busy. It's about achieving sustainable productivity, making real, measurable progress toward your most important goals, and finding that, frankly, incredible feeling of victory each day, knowing you chose disciplined action, you chose diligence over the paralysis of delay.
We really should repeat that powerful quote from Chaplain David one last time, because it feels like the fundamental key to unlocking all of this. Escaping procrastination, initiating growth.
Which one?
The secret of getting ahead is getting started.
So simple, so true. Before we wrap up, maybe just a final thought for you, the listener, to carry forward from this. If the whole idea of Eat the Frog still feels, you know, monumental right now, just ask yourself today, what is the absolute first single, maybe even just 3-minute action I can take on my ugliest task, something that requires almost zero mental negotiation?
Just the tiniest step.
Yeah, because starting small is still starting. That first step breaks the inertia.
That's great advice. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the memoir, Stop Kissing Your Frogs. And we absolutely want to thank CA Jail Outreach for hosting this deep dive and for their just unwavering dedication to sharing hope and truth, especially with families and individuals who are impacted by the justice system.
We really encourage you, if this resonates, explore their work. There's a link in the description. You can find ways there to reboot growth, connect with resources specifically tailored for families navigating the jail system, and you can even request a chaplain nationally for an incarcerated loved one.
And we truly appreciate David, the CEO and founder, for, well, sharing his heart and his very practical, clearly battle-tested wisdom through this memoir.
Absolutely. We'll close with Mr. Everett's own final statement and invitation. More than just a voice, we're a helping hand and a praying heart. Let's connect and build your tomorrow, starting today.
Until the trumpet blows, wishing you a fantastic day.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode. We are truly grateful for your support. We hope you will take a moment to follow us on all of your social media platforms. The best way to stay connected and discover everything we offer is by visiting our website, which is conveniently linked for you in the description box below. And now, as we wrap up, we want to leave you with two powerful thoughts that often come from our CEO. Helping is ordinary. Adding ice makes it extraordinary. And remember this always. There are leaders, then there are leaders who served. And among the best leaders are those who always remember to add ice. And finally, let's commit to adding that extraordinary touch, not just to our work, but to our lives. Remember to look beyond what's easy and always pray for others outside your comfort zone. Until next time, go out there and be the change.